All right, we are back. You know what we're going to do in the second half, Mr. Villain? We're going to take all the things we might possibly talk about and shove them right off the tabletop.
Can I do that?
Yes. And for those of you who are aficionados of old-time radio, and we wish that all of you were, that sound effect Mr. Millen dredged up was the legendary Closet of Fibber McGee and Molly, a wonderful radio program back from the 1940s. Since the current news has left us in something of a dour mood, I think that for this segment, we're going to go to our files, dig out some of the funny stuff we've done over the years and talked about over the years, and revisit it. Looking back on this, I'm pleased to note that we had a lot of this material sent to us by some of our early listeners. Let's go with sarcastic remarks to spice up a slow workday. Like, whatever look you were going for, you missed. And if I throw a stick, will you leave? How about the Bible was written by the same people who said the earth was flat? Here's one I like. I pretend to work, they pretend to pay me. And how about I started out with nothing and still have most of it left? And here's a few items we were sent on how to keep up a healthy level of insanity, such as page yourself over the intercom. Don't disguise your voice. Reply to everything someone says with, that's what you think. You can specify that your drive-through order is to go. When the money comes out of the ATM, you can scream, I won! I won! Third time this week! You can finish all of your sentences with, in accordance with the prophecy. And my personal favorite, when leaving the zoo, start running to the parking lot yelling, run for your lives! They're loose! Here's one someone sent titled, 100 Reasons It's Great to Be a Guy. Including among them, for a 5-day vacation, one suitcase. When channel surfing, you don't have to stop if someone's crying. Underwear, $10 a 3-pack. You can leave the hotel bed unmade. And you, if you're a guy, can be showered and ready in 10 minutes. And although perhaps it goes without saying, the world is your urinal. Among great reasons to be a guy, if something mechanical doesn't work, you can bash it with a hammer and throw it across the room. That's one we've applied often, by the way.
It works.
All right, among reasons it's great to be a guy, nobody stops telling a good dirty joke when you walk into the room. Same work, more pay. One mood, all the time. And finally, among great reasons to be a guy, if another guy shows up at a party in the same outfit, you might become lifelong buddies. And here's a few selections among top 10 signs you're not going to win an Academy Award. Such as, you're up against King Kong for Best Giant Ape. Or, your acting has been compared to Steven Seagal. Or, you played the coveted role of man who gets kicked in the nuts. And finally, among the top 10 signs you're not going to win an Academy Award, you spent months learning to be a gay cowboy, but you're not an actor. And here's some miscellaneous phrases we used recently, but by God, we're going to use them again. Such as, when one door closes and another door opens, you are probably in prison. And if you lose a sock in a dryer, it comes back to you as a Tupperware lid that doesn't fit any of your containers. Here's a favorite. I hate when a couple argues in public and I miss the beginning, so I don't know whose side I'm on. How about this one? If someone inquires what I did over the weekend, I squint and say, what did you hear? And here's one we like. Sometimes someone unexpected comes into your life out of nowhere, makes your heart race, changes you forever. We call those people cops.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Now, I can't remember the last time we heard from the great comedian Jeff Foxworthy, but his You Might Be a Redneck line of jokes had quite a run 15 years ago or so. And by God, some of these are worth re-quoting. All right, notes, Jeff Foxworthy. You might be a redneck if you've ever cut your grass and found a car. Or if your boat has not left the driveway in 15 years. You might be a redneck if your wife has ever said, "Come move this transmission so I can take a bath." And undoubtedly, you may be a redneck if your entire family has ever sat around waiting for a call from the governor to spare a loved one. You may be a redneck if the gas pedal in your car is shaped like a bare foot. Or if you've ever stolen toilet paper. Or if you've ever been involved in a custody fight over a hunting dog. I really do like some of these. You may be a redneck if you know how many bales of hay your car will hold. You may be a redneck if you have a hefty bag for a passenger side window. If you've ever been too drunk to fish, you may be a redneck. Same if hitchhikers won't get into the car with you. Or if your wife's hairdo has ever been caught in a ceiling fan. You may be a redneck if directions to your house include, "Turn off the paved road." And my personal all-time favorite, which I should probably try doing Jeff Foxworthy impression with, despite my voice. You may be a redneck if any family member has died after saying, "Hey, watch this." And while we're at it, let's jump from Jeff Foxworthy to Rodney Dangerfield. Quotes and quips from Rodney. "Oh, I tell you, it's tough to stay married. My wife kisses the dog on the lips, but she won't drink from my glass. My wife will only have sex with me for a purpose. Last night she used me to time an egg. You know, a hooker once told me she had a headache. And I gotta tell you, I was making love to this girl and she started crying. I said, 'Are you gonna hate yourself in the morning?' She said, 'No, I hate myself now.'" My personal favorite, Rodney. "My wife cut me down to 2 days of sex a month. I was lucky. A couple guys I know she cut out completely." And here's something from a while back someone sent, which was things you'll never hear a redneck say. Shades of Jeff Foxworthy. "I'll take Shakespeare for 400, Alex." Or, "Come to think of it, I'll have a Heineken." Things you'll never hear a redneck say. Things you'll never hear a redneck say. "Oh, you know that wrestling's fake." Or how about, "Honey, did you mail our donation to Greenpeace?" Things you'll never hear a redneck say. "Hey, here's an episode of Hee Haw we haven't seen." And my all-time personal favorite among things you'll never hear a redneck say. Checkmate. Now, some years back, and even today, you hear a lot of people talking about the homosexual agenda. We here at Radio Parallax were able to apparently get a hold of a copy of one. Purportedly, this is the homosexual agenda. 7 a.m., gym. 7:45, massage. 8 o'clock, breakfast. Skim milk, oatmeal, and egg whites with a dash of paprika, a sliced kiwi, and a honeydew melon. 9 a.m., manicure. 10 a.m., clothes shopping. 12 p.m., brunch. Lightly glazed salmon, asparagus, spinach salad with a vinaigrette dressing. 1:30 p.m., assume complete control of U.S. federal, state, and local government agencies. 2 o'clock, undermine all healthy marriages. 2:20, replace all school counselors with gay activists and agents of Colombian drug cartels. 2:40, bulldoze all houses of worship. 3 p.m., secure control of the internet. 3:30 p.m., steam bath to prevent facial wrinkles from the accumulated stress of world conquest. 4 p.m., cocktails. 5 p.m., chat with friends regarding subverting all mass media. 6 p.m., light dinner, bisque with Chardonnay. 8 p.m., attend show at theater. 11 p.m., bed. Now, we can't say as we can vouch for that being the so-called homosexual agenda, but that's what we've heard. All right, now we can't vouch for this next one, but this is purportedly excerpts from real resumes and cover letters. "I received a plague for Salesperson of the Year. How about, you will want me to be head honcho in no time. And I am loyal to my employer at all costs. Please feel free to respond to my resume on my office voicemail." Here's one I like especially. Note, please don't misconstrue my 14 jobs as job hopping. I have never quit a job. I'm not sure this comes from the same one, but the company made me a scapegoat, just like my three previous employers. And we can round those off with some performance evaluations, which I believe came from the military. But again, Can't swear by these. But supposedly, among the quotes from actual performance evaluations was, his men would follow him anywhere, but only out of morbid curiosity. Or, works well when under constant supervision and when cornered like a rat in a trap. He sets low personal standards and then consistently fails to achieve them. And this employee is depriving a village somewhere of an idiot. And finally, this employee should go far, and the sooner he starts, the better. Now, a couple of decades ago, the Washington Post had an invitational contest. They called them Merge-matic Books. Readers were asked to combine the works of two authors and then provide a suitable blurb. Among the honorable mentions, we have the following. Ricky Contiki Tavi. Thor Heyerdahl recounts his attempt to prove Rudyard Kipling's theory that the mongoose first came to India on a raft from Polynesia. How about Jane Eyre Jordan? Plucky English orphan girl survives hardships to lead the Chicago Bulls to the NBA championship. How about The Remains of the Day of the Jackal? A formal English butler puts his loyalty to his employer above all else, until he's persuaded to join a plot to assassinate Charles de Gaulle. The Existentialist, a Camus psychological thriller about a priest who casts out demons by convincing them there's really no purpose to what they're doing. How about Planet of the Grapes of Wrath? Astronaut lands on mysterious planet only to discover that it is his very own home planet Earth, which has been taken over by the Jodes, a race of dirt-poor corn farmers who miraculously develop rudimentary technology and evolve the ability to speak after exposure to nuclear radiation. How about Where's Walden? The challenge of locating Henry David Thoreau in each richly detailed drawing loses its appeal when it quickly becomes clear that he is always in the woods. And among the ones that were chosen as winners in this contest, we have Fahrenheit 451 of the Vanities. An 80s yuppie is denied books. He does not object or even notice. And then there's Machiavelli's The Little Prince. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry's classic children's tale as presented by Machiavelli. The whimsy of human nature is embodied in many delightful and intriguing characters, all of whom are either imprisoned or executed. And how about Green Eggs and Hamlet? Would you kill him in his bed? Thrust a dagger through his head? I would not, could not kill the king. I could not do that evil thing. I would not wed this girl, you see. Now get her to a nunnery. And lastly, Paradise Lost in Space. Satan, Moloch, and Belial are sentenced to spend eternity in a flying saucer with a goofy robot, an evil scientist, and two annoying children. And speaking of literary contests, we have this one, which was described as the cooperative writing assignment, talking about the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. An example was provided here, supposedly of an English professor at an American university, saying, quote, we will experiment with a new form called the tandem story. The process is simple. Each person will pair off with the person sitting to his or her immediate right. One of you will then write the first paragraph of a short story. The partner will read the first paragraph and then add another paragraph to the story. The first person will then add a third paragraph, and so on back and forth. Remember to reread what has been written each time in order to keep the story coherent. There's to be absolutely no talking. Anything you wish to say must be written on the paper. This is allegedly what was turned in by English students Michelle and Gary. The story. First paragraph by Michelle. At first, Lori couldn't decide what kind of tea she wanted. The chamomile, which used to be her favorite for lazy evenings at home, now reminded her too much of Carl, who once said in happier times that he liked chamomile. But she felt she must now, at all costs, keep her mind off Carl. His possessiveness was suffocating, and if she thought about him too much, her asthma started acting up again. So chamomile was out of the question. Second paragraph by Gary. Meanwhile, Advanced Sergeant Carl Harris, leader of the attack squadron now in orbit over Skylon 4, had more important things to think about than the neuroses of an airheaded asthmatic bimbo named Lori, with whom he'd spent one sweaty night over a year ago. He said into his communicator, "Polar orbit established, no sign of resistance so far." But before he could sign off, a bluish particle beam flashed out of nowhere and blasted a hole through the ship's cargo bay. Direct hit. The jolt from the direct hit sent him flying out of his seat and across the cockpit. Third paragraph by Michelle. He bumped his head and died almost immediately, but not before he felt one last pang of regret for psychically brutalizing the one woman who ever had feelings for him. Soon afterwards, Earth stopped its pointless hostilities toward the peaceful farmers of Skylon 4. Congress passes law permanently abolishing war and space travel, Lori read in her newspaper one morning. The news simultaneously excited her and bored her. She stared out the window, dreaming of her youth, when the days had passed unhurriedly and carefree, with no newspapers to read, no television to distract her from the sense of innocent wonder at all the beautiful things around her. Why must one lose one's innocence to become a woman? She pondered wistfully. Fourth paragraph. By Gary. Little did she know she had but 10 seconds to live. Thousands of miles above this city, the Andurian mothership launched the first of its lithium fusion missiles. The dim-witted, wimpy peaceniks who pushed the unilateral aerospace disarmament treatment through Congress had left Earth a defenseless target for hostile alien empires who were determined to destroy the human race. The lithium fusion missile entered the Earth's atmosphere unimpeded. The president and his top-secret mobile submarine headquarters on the ocean floor off the coast of Guam felt the inconceivably massive explosion which vaporized poor stupid Lori and 85 million other Americans. Fifth paragraph by Michelle. This is absurd. I refuse to continue this mockery of literature. My writing partner is a violent, chauvinistic, semi-literate adolescent. Sixth paragraph by Gary. Yeah? Well, you're a self-centered, tedious neurotic whose attempts at writing are the literary equivalent of Valium. Oh, shall I have some chamomile tea, or shall I have some other sort of tea? I'm just an airheaded bimbo who reads too many Danielle Steele stories. Anyway, they call each other names for the next six exchanges. The teacher weighs in with, A plus, I really like this one. And speaking of the battle of the sexes, we have the following selections from two diaries. First, her diary. Saturday night, I thought he was acting strange. We'd made plans to meet at a bar and drink. I was shopping with my friends all day long, so I thought he was upset at the fact I was a bit late. But he made no comment. Conversation wasn't flowing, so I suggested that we go somewhere quiet so we could talk. But he kept so quiet. I asked him what was wrong. He said nothing. I asked him if it was my fault that he was upset. He said it had nothing to do with me and not to worry. On the way home, I told him how much I loved him. He simply smiled and kept driving. I don't know why he didn't say, I love you too. When we got home, I felt as if I'd lost him. He just sat there and watched TV. He seemed so distant and absent. Finally, I went to bed. 10 minutes later, he came to bed and to my surprise responded to my caresses and we made love. But I still felt he was distracted in his thoughts and was somewhere else. I decided that I could not take it anymore. I must confront him with the situation. But he'd fallen asleep. I started crying. And I cried until I too fell asleep. I don't know what to do. I'm almost sure that his thoughts are with someone else. End of entry. His diary entry for the same day. Damn it! The Niners lost! But then again, I did get laid. And in a parallel fashion to that prior contest to the Washington Post, they evidently had another contest some years later and asked readers to take any word from the dictionary, alter it by adding or subtracting or changing one letter, and then supply a new definition. Here were the winners from 2003. Intoxication. Euphoria at getting a tax refund, which lasts until you realize it was your money to start with. You have to like giraffiti, which is vandalism spray painted very, very high. Also, hepatitis, terminal coolness. There's the ignoramus, a person who's both stupid and an ass. And you have to like reincarnation, which is coming back to life as a hillbilly. And my personal favorite, the Doppler effect, which is the tendency of stupid ideas to seem smarter when they come at you real fast. Now here's an assortment of funny phrases that most recently turned up as memes, but a few of these are pre-memes. Such as, some people are like slinkies. They're not really good for anything, but you still can't help but smile when you see one tumble down the stairs. And we have a science tip we've used more than once. Advice on how you can distinguish an alligator from a crocodile. You have to pay attention to whether the animal will see you later or in a while. Here's one I like. I tried donating blood today. Never again. Too many stupid questions. Whose blood is it? Where'd you get it? Why is it in a bucket? We've done a lot of genuine news items over the years that are amusing. Here's one from 3 decades ago. Apparently, Missouri Assistant Attorney General Eric Veith got a court order to bar the International Commission for Schools from issuing any college accreditations after it granted one to a fictitious school created by the Attorney General's office. Veith's office had asked the commission to accredit Eastern Missouri Business College, a college they described as granting doctorates through the mail in fields such as marine biology, genetic engineering, and aerospace science. The college faculty included Arnold Ziffel, the name of the pig on the old Green Acres TV show, Edward J. Haskell from Leave It to Beaver, and M. Howard, Jerome Howard, and Lawrence Feynman. Yes, the Three Stooges. The seal in Latin they created for the college read Solo pro avibus es educatio, and Lactrocina el raptus, which you can loosely translate as education is for the birds, and everything from petty theft to highway robbery. The International Commission for Schools president, George Reuter Jr., responded by pointing out, the Attorney General made a big deal out of the fact I didn't know who the Three Stooges were. Well, I've been to about 2 movies in the last 5 years, and we don't know Latin. And here's a real news item that surprises us a bit. Nothing to do with us, but it refers to London's Capital Radio's Operation Parallax. This took place in 1979. Capital Radio announced that Operation Parallax would soon go in effect, which was a government plan to synchronize the British calendar with the rest of the world. It was explained that ever since 1945, Britain had gradually become 48 hours ahead of all other countries because of the constant switching back and forth from British summertime. To remedy the situation, the British government had decided to cancel both April 5th and 12th that year. Capital Radio received numerous calls as a result of the announcement. One employer wanted to know if she had to pay her employees on the missing days. And another woman was curious about what would happen to her birthday, which fell on one of the canceled dates. All right, let's close out with some various and sundry quotes. England's Prince Philip, the father of King Charles III, apparently cut quite a figure for many decades in the UK and British Empire. Apparently in 1966, he made the remark that British women can't cook. Afterwards, the royal family's prince-in-law went on to unrepentantly offend people and groups on 6 continents. In 1988, for example, he insulted both women and marriage with the sexist swipe, I don't think a prostitute is more moral than a wife, but they're doing the same thing. In 1992, he even poo-pooed his own marriage, remarking in an interview, I'd much rather have stayed in the Navy, frankly. World leaders were apparently targets for his unbridled comments. In 2003, he mocked the president of Nigeria, who was dressed in traditional robes, saying, You look like you're ready for bed. He reportedly told Paraguay's dictator General Stroessner, It's a pleasure to be in a country that isn't ruled by its people. Philip apparently told a 13-year-old boy in 2001 that he was too fat to become an astronaut. And my personal favorite, in 1995, he evidently asked a Scottish driving instructor, how do you keep the natives off the booze long enough to pass the test? And in 1998, he glibly questioned a Brit who had just returned from New Guinea with, you managed not to get eaten then. Two more. Here's one from Jay Leno from a while back. In an interview in GQ magazine, John Edwards' mistress said she slept with him on the first day they met. But she wasn't his mistress. She was just playing the role. Said Jay, and apparently the audition went so well, she got the job. And from Jimmy Kimmel. A lot of guys say women's soccer is boring. But in truth, all soccer is boring. Which means we are now losing to Japan in math, science, and penalty kicks. All right, we hope you had some fun with that. We had to lighten things up a little bit here. This program was produced, like all of them are, by Edward McMillan, who in fact had nothing to do with London's Operation Parallax in 1979.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I'm Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax. We'll talk to you soon, and thanks, Guy.